I heard this story about a guy who was sick, and he didn't know just how sick he was, but he really believed it was something pretty serious, so he decided to go to the doctor. And he goes to his doctor, and his doctor says, "Wow, I don't know what's going on." So his doctor sends him to a specialist. Specialist looks at him, decides, you know, they need to run some bunch of tests. So they schedule the tests, and they go run the test, and the tests are those types that kind of knock you out. And so the husband is kind of in loopy land, and the doctor wants to talk to the wife. And the doctor says, "Look, we found out what's wrong, and your husband has this very rare disease. And if it goes untreated, he's going to die sooner rather than later." And the wife, as you can imagine, just broke down. And the doctor stopped and said, but there's hope. There's this possibility. We have this new treatment. But it's a hard treatment. And it's going to require a lot of you. Because if he goes on this treatment, he has to eat a special diet. And you can't get it eating out, so you have to cook for him 3 times a day. And if he goes on this treatment, his environment has to be just very clean. So you're going to have to clean regularly. And he's going to be real weak, and he's going to need you by him. But if you're willing to do that, we think we can pull him out of this. And the wife goes, and the husband wakes up. And he says, "Well, what'd the doctor say?" And she said, "Well, I got good news, I got bad news." "Good news is they know what's wrong with you. Bad news is you're going to die." That was a groaner, and some people knew what was coming, but I still made me chuckle. But more than made me chuckle, it made me think about how many of us, right, had the same thoughts. And not the thought that you're going to let your spouse die, but because that wouldn't be loving like Jesus, but the thought that says, "I know there's something I can do, but I'm going to choose not to do it because it's too much work, it's too inconvenient, it puts me out of my comfort zone, I don't want to go through the hassle." Anyone else in here this morning ever know something needs to be done, but yet you think you're just too busy, too cool, too important to actually do it? Anyone other than me? If you don't have your hands up, you're lying. And if you want to love like Jesus, you don't lie. Just own what's wrong with us, because that's who we are. Now, the story that Judy read this morning for the gospel lesson, it's a story most of us have heard more than once. The problem is we're not used to hearing it at the end of August, right? We're used to hearing that story during Holy Week, on the Thursday before Good Friday. That's when we hear from the 13th chapter of John. And we call that day Maundy Thursday. And the reason why we call it Maundy Thursday is Maundy is Latin, is the understanding of Latin maditum. And maditum translates to commandment, and it's where we get our word mandate. And the reason why we call it Maundy Thursday, because in the 13th chapter of John, Jesus gives us two very personal commands. One of the commands, and I think the one that was the most important, he gave towards the end of the chapter. Chapter 13, verse 34, goes something like this: "I give you a new commandment. Love each other just as I have loved you, so you must also love each other." Now, for those of you who are biblical people and you want the little biblical trivia, this is the first time in the Gospels that Jesus talks about loving his disciples. John 3:16, he says, "For God so loved the world." But this time, at that moment, on that night, Jesus made it very personal. Jesus said, "I love you." And he wanted the disciples to understand that it wasn't about that disciple or that disciple, it was about them. And I want you to understand the same thing, because I don't tell you this very often, but when it comes to Jesus loving you, it's about you. It's not about the person sitting next to you or over in that pew. Jesus wants you to know it's about you. And I don't tell you that often, that's about you. But for this night, it was about the love that Jesus had for each of those guys. Now, so the question that you should ask yourself then is, what kind of love was it? Well, in the first verse of the 13th chapter, Jesus answers that when he says that having loved his own who were in the world, he loved them fully. He loved them completely. He loved them totally. He loved them as much as anyone could love anyone else. It was huge. It was a big love. And then Jesus says, back to the commandment, you are to love those around you like I love you. Well, how do I love you? I love you fully and completely, to the fullest possible extent. But what does that mean? And as the evening begins, Jesus begins to illustrate what that looks like. It's a normal evening of Passover. The disciples had been to Passover year after year after year since the time they were kids. It never changed. It always was pretty much the same. And this evening kind of started that way. But then it changed. Because in the midst of the meal, Jesus got up from the table. And when he got up from the table, he took his robe off. And underneath his robe, he was wearing a tunic. And a tunic is like an undergarment. And what makes it special for that night is a tunic is what a slave or a servant would wear at a meal. And according to John's gospel, he picked up the tunic. He took off his robe, wearing a tunic, and he picked up a water basin. And he began to think things over topsy-turvy and flip things upside down. Because that's what Jesus did. And on this night, he did it like no other night. You have to understand, when he took the robe off and had just the tunic on, he took the form, wore the clothes of a servant. Now, you got to understand, Jesus just didn't serve that night. He actually became a servant. And that's Paul, in his letter to Philippians, says it like this, that Jesus emptied himself, giving up everything he had earned, every right that belonged to him, every power that the Son of God would have, gave it all up and became a servant for us. Jesus didn't just serve. He became a servant. And there is a huge difference between choosing to serve and choosing to be a servant. Because when we choose to serve, we're still in control, right? It's still, we're still in charge. We decide who we will serve, what we will serve, how much we will serve, when we will do it. It's still all about us. It's about me. And oftentimes, I can't speak for you, oftentimes I choose to serve when I know it's going to make me look good, right? I thought about this as I was preparing for this series, and I thought about when I was growing up, when we moved from New York to Florida, and mom was a single mom working 40, 50, 60 hours a week trying to keep three children together, and she would leave for work early. She'd take my sister to preschool, and it was me and my older brother would walk to school and walk home. And when we walked home, we came home to an empty house, which we didn't think that bad. Now apparently it's not good, but back then we didn't think it was bad. In fact, we kind of enjoyed it. Except on the kitchen counter every day, my mom would leave a list of chores for us to do. Chores for my evil older brother and chores for me, right? And they weren't a lot. Well, Jill can tell you Mike's evil, right? I'm not making that up. Annie has problems, Mike is evil, right? There you go. And I'm just the perfect little middle child. And they weren't difficult chores, and they weren't chores that they're probably chores we could get finished in 15 minutes, right? But we had a couple hours. Mom wanted them done before she got home from work. And Mike, you know, being the oldest, you know, he'd go right to him, finish his chores. I was a more responsible, ordinary, loving son, and I would enjoy myself for a couple hours, right? I would watch a little TV, eat a little ice cream, and then I would start tackling my chores, but I did so very intentionally and very well-timed. Because you see, it wasn't good if I had my chores done long before my mom got home. I wanted her to see me finishing up the chores when she walked in the house. Right, so I would be all sweaty and out of breath and little drama thrown in, and I would be, so mom's, oh, Marty, you're such a good son doing all your chores. That's why I was her favorite, right? But I wanted to look good, and I wonder if that's the same game the disciples were playing that night, right? They wanted to look good. You see, what Luke tells us, and this is what I love, Luke tells us in his story of this same time, about the time Jesus got up in John's gospel and Luke's gospel, there's an argument going on between the disciples of who's the greatest, right? John doesn't bother recording the argument because John knew better. What John does is he just says, I'm not going to tell you about the argument. I'm just going to have Jesus show you who the greatest is. And Jesus got up, took the form of a servant, and began to wash the feet. And Leah was exactly right. It was the yuckiest, dirtiest job you could imagine. But if a host did not offer a servant to wash the feet, it was considered disrespectful to his guest. So Jesus sat there. He saw no one else was doing it. He saw no one was moving. And rather than worrying about himself, rather than worrying what it would look like for the Son of God to stoop low and wash feet, Jesus just took off his robe, filled up a basin, washed the feet. And what I love about the story, if you paid attention, is when he was finished, he was not, bless you, he was not like us, right? Because I don't know about you, but if I would have had to get up and wash the feet because Eddie was too good to wash the staff's feet, if I had to do that, trust me, there would have been little sarcastic, passive-aggressive comments made right when I finished, right? And I would, but Jesus gave none of that. Jesus didn't lecture. Jesus didn't wag his finger. Jesus didn't say, you should have done this. All Jesus did was wash the feet and then look at them and say, just as I have done, you should have done also. That was it. And once again, Jesus made it personal. Because when Jesus gave the commandment to love as he loved, remember, we talked about that, and he made it about you. He said, I love you, not the person, I love you. This is about you. Jesus says the same thing here. Because what Jesus says is, just as I have done, you do also. And the problem with a lot of us, we think Jesus is talking to that guy, right? He's not talking to that guy. He wants her to what? Not me. Surely that person can, not me. I'm the senior pastor. I'm too important. I'm too busy. I'm too cool. I'm too whatever. But Jesus says, no, it's about you answering the call to be a servant. Because when you choose to serve, you're still in control. You control who, you control what, you control when, and you control how. But when you become a servant, it becomes a way of life. And you give up the ability and the right to be in control and the need to gain anything from those whom you serve. That's the difference between serving and being a servant. Now, some of you signed a banner when you were here. If you haven't, the banner, where's the banner hanging? Over by the day school entrance, right? And it just says, love is greater than fear. Some of us said, we're going to live our lives in such a way that love is greater than fear. When you live your life that way, you choose not just to serve, but to be a servant. We're in the middle of a series called Love Like Jesus. Last week we talked about, in order to love like Jesus, you got to be willing to forgive. In order to love like Jesus, not only do you have to be willing to forgive, you have to become a servant. And not just serve when it's convenient, or easy, or glamorous, or exciting. See, that's what it means to be a follower. Now, I can't speak for any of the preachers in the church. There's a few retired preachers, and I don't see Martha. Are you here? Martha's here. Martha, I don't want to speak for Martha, but Martha, I don't know about you. I don't know about Eddie. But when I'm out, and I'm out and about, and no one knows I'm a preacher, the last thing I want them to know that I do is being a preacher, right? I don't ever tell them. And if they ask me, what do? I generally just change the subject. Unless, of course, I'm on the golf course. Because, see, I love being on the golf course where someone doesn't know you're a preacher and they're dropping, the words they shouldn't drop. And then about the ninth hole, they say, so what do? Well, I'm a preacher. And then the whole thing changes, right? And then I enjoy it because I make them feel really crummy, and that's fun. But I don't like telling people I'm a preacher because all of a sudden everything changes about the way they treat you. They start wanting to call you reverend and brother and all that. Yeah, right? But the real reason why, Martha, I don't like telling them is because I've never understood this. When someone finds out you're a preacher, they start telling you why they don't go to church. Right? If I told them I was a dentist, they never say, well, I don't go to the dentist because... But when you tell them you're a preacher, you hear all the reasons why they don't go to church, right? And I just want to scream because it always boils down to eventually the same reason why they don't go. Are you ready? And it's just I just want to slap them. But because I'm a preacher, I don't. But the day before I retire, I'm just going to go around slapping people. So don't be around me if you're one of those people. Okay? And the reason why they tell you they're not in church is because, get this, I love it, because I haven't found a church that meets my needs. Now that just drives me ballistic. Because I just want to shake them and say, you don't understand church. Because although it is about you when it comes to Jesus loving you, and although it is about you when Jesus gives you the mandate to serve, to be a servant, it ain't about you getting your needs met in church. If you think, I can't say this any clearer, if you think it's about you, you're in the wrong church. Because what church is it about, and if you can show me in the Bible where it says different, then I will change the entire sermon. Church is not about meeting your needs. The church that is following Jesus is about meeting the needs of the people in the community, the needs of the people who are hurting, the needs of the people who are hungry, who are naked, who are in prison. It's about meeting other people's needs. And if you come looking for a church meeting your needs, you are in the wrong place. Now, it would be great if it happens to meet your needs. But it's not about you. It's about being a servant. That's what it comes down to. And when you refuse to be a servant in the church, you know who loses out? God does. Because God has wired you and called you to do something for Him that I believe only you can do. One of the things I love about Emmaus, who's been on Emmaus? Okay. The Emmaus cross is my favorite thing. Because on the back of the cross, if you flip it over, it says, Christ is counting on you. And what that says to me, that if I have something God wants me to do and I choose to walk away from it, it might not get done. There might not be a plan B. So God misses out. But you know who else misses out? You do. See, because what I've discovered is when people are servants, lives are changed. And the first life God changes is yours. I often get asked, you know, Marty, why don't you preach about how to have a better marriage, right? How to be a better boss, how to be a better employee, how to be a better parent, how to be a better kid, how to be a better neighbor, how to be a better friend, how to be a better church. How can I make my life better? How can I have a better relationship with God? All right, so to all of you people who want me to preach that, here it comes. I'm going to give you the answer. It is so easy, right? And then I never have to preach it again. You want to have a better marriage? Serve your spouse. You want to be a better parent? Serve your kid. You want to be a better kid? Guess what? Serve your parent. You want to be a better friend? Serve your friends. You want to be a better church? Serve the church. You want to have a better life? Become a servant. Because when you're a servant, God changes lives, and the first life He changes is yours. I mean, why do you think kids want to go to UM Army when it's freaking 110 degrees and they're paying $250 to go or whatever it is and sweat and be for a week and they come back and they're fired up? Why? Because their lives were changed. Not because they served. They stepped out of their comfort zone. Eddie can tell you. Eddie was in charge of the United Methodist response to Ike and Galveston, rebuilding homes. And he had more people going down there than, and why? It's not fun rebuilding homes in Galveston when there's no electricity and there's no plumbing. It's because people understood that when you serve, lives are changed, and the first life that is changed is yours. Eddie can tell you story after story after story. Lives changed, not just of the clients, but of the people who served. So that's what it's about. We're going to have this day coming up on October 22nd called Mo City First Cares, and it's all about being servants. You know, it's not about marketing the church. It's not about evangelism for the church. It's not about telling people, oh, we're from First United Methodist Church, look at us. It's about being servants in a community so that lives are changed. And I'll bet you any amount of money that the first life God will change will be yours, because that's how He works when someone says, I'm a servant. You see, on a night 2,000 years ago, Jesus stood up and He didn't talk about who the greatest was. He simply showed who the greatest is. And the greatest isn't the one who preaches in the middle of the sanctuary. It isn't the one who gets the publicity in the newsletter. is the one whose picture is splattered on the web page. The one who is the greatest is the one who changes the diapers in the nursery. The one who's the greatest is the one who says, you know what? I can love children. I'm going to go love kids on Sunday morning. The one that the greatest is the one that says, you know those middle school kids that want to drive you batty? They need someone to love them, and I can do that. The one that's the greatest is the one that says, here I am. I want to serve. The one that's the greatest is the one who sees what God sees and hears what God hears and feels what God feels, and then they see the needs of the people around them and they say, I can do that. I may get dirty, it may be uncomfortable, maybe beneath me to do, but I can do that. You want to prove that love is greater than fear? You don't do with words. You do by stooping low and serving. You want to learn to love like Jesus? Then take off your robes and pick up a basin. Because through your serving, God changes lives. And the first one he changes is yours. And that's the gospel. There's not much else I can say.